The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1038. It's the 10th of April 2018. On the podcast today, I have Colin Bird, Chief Executive Officer and Chairman of Galileo Resources, that's GLR ticker, and Colin describes the results of a further 7 new diamond drill holes from his current drilling campaign on the Zambian Star Zinc project. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about the following stocks: Salt Lake Potash, SO4 is ticker there. Apollo Minerals, listed on the ASX. I know a lot of people do invest in the ASX. That's Australian, of course, stock exchange. And a company called DragApp.com. And I've tested this out. And essentially, it's a startup. I don't know how you get involved with investing in it. But it's very interesting. Early startup. In fact, Alan does explain how you can get involved. But it basically changes your Gmail into an organization. I don't know if you've ever used something called Trello, these kind of organizational apps. There's one called Asana as well. But basically, it does that to your email. And I've just tried it on my Gmail. And it lists it into columns. And you can sort of label those columns and sort them organizationally wise. And you can also just switch it off. It's quite easy to switch off and on. It's quite, you know, there's a little button at the top. But I find it very useful, and I'll try and mess around with it and experiment with it. I've also got on the podcast top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top 5 most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Bird, Chief Executive Officer and Chairman of Galileo Resources, at GLR ticker there. Colin, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Now, you've got some very interesting results, additional results from the Star Zinc project you got there. But before we get into the detail of that, for people listening, Colin, who's never heard of Galileo Resources, how would you describe the business to them?
Well, Galileo Resources is generally an opportunity-driven business. The project we're talking about today is a zinc project in Lusaka, and that's the focus of a lot of our attention at the moment. We have a gold project in Nevada, which has shown interesting results. And we have a near ready for production, which we're applying for a mining license and got an offtake agreement with a phosphate project in the northwest part of South Africa. So it's a diverse company. But I think the good news is two projects which are getting very, very close to production. And one of them, of course, the zinc space, where there's not a lot of new projects emerging. And this one appears to have all the fundamentals of quality that one would be looking for.
Yeah. Well, let's go into these drilling results. So take us through some of these results, Colin, if you could.
Good, yeah. They're extremely good. You know, this is they stand out on the paper and almost speak for themselves. But, you know, it's not often, I was going to say in this day and age, it is not often that one sees zinc grades in excess of 40%.
No.
And we report 3 holes in excess of 40%. And that's in the massive and semi-massive exposures, intersections. But, you know, we've also got big intersections, greater than 18% in the massive and the semi-massive. And again, thick zones of willemite mineralization. And then I think, you know, to me, which is very, very important, is that we said we were going to test the cast, the oxides, mm-hmm. And we have done. We've tested those, which essentially are on the periphery, if you like, of the main body. And they're showing 3s, 4s, 5s, and 6%, and again, over good thicknesses. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, when one looks at this set of results, they're very close to surface. The deepest hole is no deeper than 80 meters. And a lot of this stuff, especially the cast, is on surface, starts at surface, and is scrapable. So you don't have to blast it. I say that in my comments there, that you don't have to blast it. Easy to win. So a cutoff of around about 4% might be more than reasonable for the sort of lower grade material. So I actually foresee an operation which is iGrade, and that can be shipped. And there are many examples of it around the world of shipping this stuff for direct smelting. The medium grade, which will lend itself to vat leach processes. And then the low grade, of course, which can go on pads and be treated again, because all of the materials, all of the zinc types have demonstrated that they are amenable to leaching.
Yeah.
And I think what else is quite good out of this is that we're getting good values of germanium and silver as well, which is excellent news, isn't it?
Yeah, and well, that's good. So what's next here then, Colin?
Well, next, this is a good platform. This is a really good platform to develop the project from. We're doing, we've got the core. What better than the core to work out the responsibility to the response to magnetism, to conductivity, to gravity, and do all sorts of tests on the core to see which is the best geophysics method to go forward. We've done our specific gravity test, and already from previous work we know that the specific gravity numbers were patently wrong, and instead of working on 3 we'll be working nearer to 4, so that's a 25% increase in the resource straight away. We're going to model independently model this, and I'm trying to find out the controls for the massif in order to direct ourselves towards a conceptual resource. Now, the conceptual resource, I am convinced, will be much bigger than the previous any previous statements made about this project. Because, as I said, we're reporting big thicknesses, and we're reporting good strike extension. So that's all good news, which will lead to a bigger tonnage. And I don't think we'll sort of be bulking the tonnage up. I think that we'll be sort of have a two-type operation of low to medium grade and obviously high grade, which might not be treated other than to crush and send away for direct smelting. So we'll build up a model. We'll build up a geological model. We'll get the lithology trends, which will better direct our drilling. We may, and we may not for that matter as well, but we may do some geophysics. And, of course, we've got to test those areas now which are adjacent and nearby, which has showed excellent geophysical and excellent geochemical signatures. So looking forward to developing this project now. It's showing all the signs, Justin, of being something quite significant.
Yeah, well, if you could, I mean, you mentioned a lot of work to go on there. And sort of, you know, timeline-wise, so what would you say is going to happen within the next 6 months, and then maybe next 12 months? What would you say?
Well, within the next 6 months, even, I must have a scoping study, because the market needs to know what is this. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to put an envelope around it. I've got to basically find out the appropriate cutoff, the modus operandi for the leaching operations, vat leach and open pad leach. And then, of course, the direct smelting, I've got to look into that as well. So I want to build a kind of technical financial operating model to know exactly where this project fits in the world. So that, I believe, we can do as a company by not much later than the end of July. Further metallurgical test work to define the leaching parameters of the low-grade material, I think, will be a necessity. We should be able to report on that in the same period. I'll certainly have a model for this ore body, which hopefully we'll put into our website. I'm hoping to have that available by not much later than the end of May. And I'd really like to start drilling these outlying areas, which have got the strong suggestion of mineralization. I'd like to start drilling them at about the same time, end of May, middle of June. But of course, you know, the generation of the model will assist us in a great way with targeting our future drilling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Colin, it looks like you're happy there with everything's progressing there. So if someone's listening to this, go on.
I'm absolutely delighted with the way this drilling program has gone. They really are very, very good results. And as I said at the start of this interview, that what a platform to be taking forward.
Yeah. Well, listen, I mean, I can hear that, you know, you are delighted, you're very happy what's going on, the progress you're making there. If someone else is listening to this and not following the story, I can also sense, you know, your optimism here. But like I said, they haven't hit that follow button yet on your page. Give them three quick reasons why they should and add you to their watch list, Colin.
Well, one company, Glenover, ready for production, just awaiting a mining license. Stars Inc., going through the ranks of the emerging zinc producers, showing an underlying project which has got tremendous legs with a very high-grade component, which looks like low-cost production and low capital, should have a place in tomorrow's world zinc. And, of course, a very low market capitalization relative to assets and projects.
Excellent stuff. Colin, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
That's very kind of you. Thank you very much. Always nice to chat to you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You all right, Al?
Yeah, I'm very good, Justin. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Yes, not too bad. I say good. I'm finding the weather, I'm getting older. I think that's why older people move abroad. As I'm getting older, I just feel the weather, you know, having more of an effect on my mood, you know?
It's just grey, isn't it? I mean, I'm sitting here I'm very fortunate to live in Seaford, which is a lovely place to live, but I'm sitting here looking out and it's just grey. It's just horrible. It really is. And you think, come on, you know, we've had the winter now. We've had all this greyness. Let's get on, get some sunshine, get some heat. You know, yeah. I want my T-shirt and shorts back on, not sort of jeans and, you know, shirt
you
and jumpers.
You always wear T-shirts and, you know, Hawaiian style, top to bottom. I know you're Alan Seaford there. You are drinking cocktails. And
That's right.
So, I need to pretend to wear normal clothes, but you are a man of leisure there, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, that's enough of the weather, because Brits, we're stereotyped.
People don't want to know about me. They don't want to know about me and you, Just. They want to find out what we're talking about today. What are the investment opportunities we can bring to their attention today?
Go on then.
Okay, so the first one, wanted to return to this. We spoke about this probably about a month ago. A company called Salt Lake Potash, and the epic code is SO4, which is very applicable. Salt Lake Potash, what do? They have probably one of the largest assets of its kind in the world. They have 9 salt lakes in the Northern Goldfields area of Western Australia, nearly 5,000 square kilometres, for which they've been granted application licences to basically harvest sulphate of potash, which is, of course, a crop nutrient. It's a key element to fertiliser and so on. A few weeks ago, the company have undertaken a number of surveys. A few weeks ago, they scheduled some tests with the partner, and the targets or the lakes that they surveyed revealed world-class scale potential. In other words, worthwhile investing into this asset to harvest the mineral. Now, the beauty of these lakes is that you can literally walk onto those lakes with a spade and scrape the surface, and there's your potash.
Yeah, they wouldn't thank you for that, though, if they own the rights and you do that.
Oh, of course they would.
I'm just taking some potash, fellas.
Well, that's right. Yeah. But sort of being in Australia, there'd probably be a sniper on the ridge, so you get taken out, you know. So you wouldn't even make it back to the edge of the lake with your
bags
full of potash.
Yeah,
that's right. But nonetheless, when it rains, which is not very frequent in those parts, but when it rains, it basically it rejuvenates itself. So it's that you've got almost an infinite supply of potash from these assets. Added to this, road and rail links are very good. They can get the stuff to market cheaply and easily. And rather than having to dig down and open up a mine to get it, this stuff is right on the surface. It's just fantastic. Salt Lake Potash have been working away on distribution agreements, and yesterday the company announced that Mitsubishi and Salt Lake Potash had entered an offtake agreement for the company to acquire the rights, offtake rights for up to 50% of the potash production from a demonstration plant a demonstration plant at the Goldfields Solnis project. So, you know, I mean, that's, if you wanted a global name to bring to the table, you couldn't get much more global than that. And of course, people tend to associate Mitsubishi with cars. Of course, they produced some very some fantastic aircraft during World War II, but that's another story. But Mitsubishi is a global engineering giant of a company, and it has a massive chemical division, it has a massive machinery energy division, and of course the one would imagine that the offtake will be going into the chemical division. But this is a huge step to take. It's validation with a capital V of the assets that Salt Lake Potash have control of, and the company said yesterday, the CEO Matt Symes said yesterday, that they have several other distribution agreements lined up for the coming months, which is very exciting indeed.
Yeah, SO4 is the ticker there. And I don't know much about them, of course, but whenever a company signs up with a major, you've got to look at it. And you know, it's one of those flags that almost, you know, not a red flag, I don't know what colour flag, I'm looking at a white flag. You know, it's lifted up and says, have a look at this, because the fact is, big companies do not enter agreements with smaller companies unless they've done a lot of due diligence themselves, you know?
Exactly,
because
yeah.
They didn't get that big. They've got the money, their manpower, and the lawyers, and the, you know, and the sort of analysts to look at what that smaller company's got. So they've done, I'm not saying you should say, oh, just jump on board, they've done the research, I don't need to. What I'm saying is, this should always raise a flag of interest to you when a big company sort of hooks up or does an MOU or something like that, some kind of JV or anything at all with a smaller company, because it's very interesting. You know, they've obviously got something here, so it's worth looking into. So I will look into that.
Well, I think as well, it's also the intellectual rights around the name as well. You know, a huge global company can protect its reputation, and it, as you said just now, it's not going to put its name to a project like this unless it's done a lot of due diligence. And the announcement simply doesn't reflect that. You know, the fact is that probably behind the scenes for the last 6-8 months, there have been hordes of lawyers sifting through the data, looking at the paper, and getting this in place in the lead up to this announcement. And, you know, Mitsubishi put their name to something like this, they will have done the homework, they know what they're buying into, and they know that they've got an infinite supply they're going forward. But
I love the picture of hordes of lawyers.
Yes, yeah.
It's probably just one guy who signed the project, but I love the hordes of lawyers.
I'm just looking
at it quickly, though. I always look at the cash position of a company of non-revenue generating, and they're seeing, okay, 31st December, interim results, they had cash reserves of $10.5 million.
Plenty of cash on the bank.
Yeah, net assets there, so I don't know.
Plenty of cash to take it for. An awful lot in the way of assets, and you know, I'm sure that if they do need to execute a raise in the future, which I'm sure they will do to develop, there'll be an awful lot of institutions keen to put their money into a project like this too. So,
Just for anyone, you know, I mean, literally, if you look at, I always do this quick reference. Of course, if you don't know what work they're doing, exploration is always a bit expensive. But if you look at what they lost over the last half years, about $500,000. $5 million, and they've got 10.5 million cash. So you could say, you know, if they carry on the current cash burn, that will last them another year. So up to the end of the year, but of course, if they're doing more expensive exploration, it may take a bit. I always lob off a bit, though. I always say about 9 months, you know, take about 10% off that or 20% off that, just in case, to be safe. Because obviously, if company starts a fundraise, they need to do it a couple of months if their management are worth their salt. Should be doing it a few months before they actually need it. Otherwise, if they're desperate, they need it. It won't be a good result. It'd normally be a bit highly discounted for a different raise. Cool. Look into them. So they're looking to do a demonstration of what they're doing. It says here 50,000 tons per annum of sulfate of potash. Is that right?
Yeah.
I'll have to work out how much that costs and what their margins
that's
are.
That's great. But also their production costs are, because it's there right on the surface, their production costs compared to digging down to get the stuff out of the ground is about 10% of equivalent potash mines. I mean, obviously, Sirius Minerals is a good example there. I think the production cost to get the stuff onto the transport exporter to distribute out to the buyers is roughly 10% of the cost that or 10% of what it would cost a company like Sirius Minerals to produce and get out to market as well. So that's highly significant. I think when you're doing an assessment, you've got to look at the way the stuff is got out of the ground and got to market. And with Salt Lake, the beauty of it is they got nine lakes and it's all sitting on the surface. So yeah, but if you're there, don't take a spade and go and get some, because you will be shot probably. But there we go.
Okay, all right. So I don't know what the price is for a ton of potash. Do you? I can't think what it is, but they are. I mean, I look at the presentation there. It's worth looking at, but they are the lowest quartile of this chart they've got. They have several different producers, about 10 of them. They're the lowest of the top sort of 10 well-known ones. So it's worth looking. Cool, lowest CapEx. Marvellous out there. So what's next, fella?
Okay, another mining company for you. And this company is currently ASX listed. The company have said as it grows, it will look at the opportunities to list on a European exchange or possibly a UK exchange. The company is Apollo Minerals. And the EPIC code, it's an ASX listed company. The EPIC code is AON. Mm-hmm. Currently worth $39 million. Been as low as 0.18 Aussie dollars and as high as 0.330 Aussie dollars, currently trading at 0.28 Aussie dollars. So Apollo Minerals have just raised, they've undertaken an institutional fundraise, and Hugo Schumann, the CEO, discussed this with Andrew Scott on Proactive Investors a couple of weeks back. To fund exploration programs, drilling and feasibility studies at Couflens in South France, and also it's the Orinier project, which is adjacent to Couflens. Now Couflens, the project incorporates the Salo mine, which is a very old mine. It's a very famous tungsten mine, and of course the price of tungsten, if anyone's been watching, has rejuvenated rather sharply this year, over the past year. Tungsten, of course, has applications, multitude of applications for light filaments, furnaces, military applications, and all sorts. And it's one of only two mines outside China that produces at the volume that it does. Also included in that, the mine also produces gold, in a recent study undertaken, the company discovered 24 grams of gold per ton, which is a pretty good number at Couflens, and an even higher number, 39 grams per ton, at the neighbouring Orinier project. So the company is at a very exciting phase. Is currently worth 39 million Aussie dollars, and is obviously as the feasibility studies come through and the company gets closer to looking to get the stuff out of the ground, I think we can expect to see some movements higher. But there's a world proven management team behind it. There's Hugo Schumann, of course, and Ian Medelmas, both involved with Papillon Resources previously, and other well known companies, and this company, I think, is worth a closer look, and clearly if it's as it expands, we can expect to see it arrive possibly on our shores in the form of a UK listing, or at the very least a listing somewhere in Europe.
Yeah, okay. And what is the ticker was again, Al?
The ticker for Apollo Minerals is AON. So if you basically go to Google, type in Apollo Minerals share price, you'll see that come up, and you can see what the company the share price performance has been over the past year. So it's clearly jumped up from 0.2p to 0.2 Aussie dollars to 0.3 Aussie dollars after the recent fundraise. There's an awful lot of news to come, and if you just look at what the tungsten market's done recently, then I think that'll give you some idea of the potential.
Marvellous. Anything else you're looking at, Al?
Yes, indeed. We've talked about unlisted companies in the past and some of the work we're doing in that area. We're working with our technology funding partner, Sentient Capital, in this regard. But I spoke yesterday with a guy called Nick Timms, who is chief executive of a company called DragApp. That's DRAGAPP. So if you Google that, it'll all come up. What DragApp does, you've got customer relationship management software programs that pull everything into one place and allow you to manage everything. This does exactly the same for your inbox. So all of the messages you get, everything that comes through to you, you can basically pull it into your inbox so it's all in one place. And as the name implies, you can drag screens together, and it's a very malleable, easy-to-use solution. The company slogan is Inbox Your Life. There's a lot of information on their website, which is at dragapp.com. The company, over the past year, has amassed some 30,000 users in nearly 200 countries, but it's got an impressive number of blue chip clients already. They include Uber, Netflix, Spotify, and Airbnb. But their marketing strategy, I think, is most impressive. For every $30 they spend, they currently get back $36 in revenue, which is highly impressive, given that it's just a small team of IT people. The company undertaking a $600,000 raise through Sentient Capital. And if you want to find out more about this and get investment documents, if you go to the Brand UK website on the Growth Company Multichannel, you see the DragApp page, and you can basically follow on from there and register to receive those documents. But this is a really exciting little company, and it's at a very early stage. But with these sort of numbers, I don't think it's going to be at this size for too long.
When you said DragApp, I thought it was a one-stop shop for all drag queen wannabes, so anything you want, if you've got an ambition to be a drag queen. But no, I've gone to that dragapp.com, and so yep. you can use that with Google, can't you, and all that and stuff like that.
It fits
on top of that, and yeah.
If you've got Google Chrome, you can just drag it straight. Yeah, literally drag it straight in. But it's excellent. It's a really malleable solution, and I think that they also have the DragApp Pro offering, which is used by sales teams together, and they've developed a model for that, which they're really excited about going forward. So I think there's going to be a huge spurt in revenue growth this year. And again, we're all looking for, as investors, we're all looking to get into companies at an early stage. But this is a great quality company. The CEO is a very nice guy. I've met him, and we've spoken to him, and I'm very impressed by what they do. And I think it could be a great opportunity. But clearly, as with any early stage company, in fact, as with all the investments we've talked about today, do your own research first.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what? I don't know what the heck I've done. I've just transformed my Google, because I've got Gmail. I've just done it. Yep. I've downloaded it, added the thing, but they've got, it basically transforms your Google Mail into columns, and you can sort of relabel those columns. So you've got to do, doing, done, or add column. So basically, you put them into. So I suppose rather than drag it to the side there, but you can still see them. And I quite like it because it just makes it more organized. So, and there's a little tab switch at the top right there. You can switch on and off if you want to go back to the normal sort of Google layout. Marvelous. And I'll switch it back on. I may do that. It's good because, I quite like organising into little columns and stuff like that. I quite like that.
Well, I think it's very intuitive and it's really well thought through.
Do you know Trello? It's for email. So you basically, Trello is a different site. You have to go there, and obviously it's outside your email. But this actually organises your email in that such a way. So I quite like that. It's almost like, I quite like that. I'll have a mess around with that. And so where are they? If I want to invest in this, where would I go?
Okay, so if you go to branduk.net, branduk.net, and you'll see on the toolbar Growth Company Multichannel.
Okay.
If you click on, can you see the DragApp drop down?
I'm saying again, brand. I was looking at that DragApp thing. So branduk.net. Yeah.
Yeah, brand.
I don't spell brand now. I know I come across as stupid sometimes, but so then I go to Growth Multichannel DragApp. Okay, cool, I got it. Yeah.
And, then you can...
You talked to the guy there, did you? As well as an interview there with him, is it? Yeah.
That's right. So there's also an interview that I did with Nick Timms yesterday. So if you can listen to that too, that will tell you a little bit more. You'll hear it from the horse's mouth. But if you want to sign up to receive investment documents, you can actually click on that page there. So click on the Sentient Capital logo and register to receive the docs.
Marvellous. Well, like I said, you know, we're doing research, everyone, but I quite like the look of that. I mean, I've messed around that, so you know, see how it goes. But it's very easy to switch on and switch off, which I quite like. I thought, I've lost my Google Mail, but it's a little switch at the top to switch on and off to activate or deactivate it. Marvellous. Al, thanks for that, and we'll speak next week, fella.
Thanks, Josh. Speak next week.
Okay, here are the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Armadale Capital, ACP. I noticed, by the way, they did a placing yesterday for just short of £1 million. And I've written a couple of blogs on this. And like I said, do your own research. It's just information. But I noticed a guy called Mike Bull, who's a technical director of Armadale Capital, took about a quarter of the placing yesterday. He basically subscribed for 225,000 shares, pounds worth of shares. It's almost a quarter of the raise. And he owns now 8.6% of the company. And you think, well, surely he knows about the what's going on there. But that's a lot of money, a big investment for a technical director there. At four, Havivo, HVO. At three, Defence, third most followed company. At two, Pantheon Resources, PNR. And number one, most followed company is Coro Energy, C-O-R-O. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Lions Gold, Finland Gold Licenses, and JV Stake Increase. At four, StratAero, investments in Gyrometric Systems. At three, Motive Bio, fiscal year 2017 results. At two, Sirica Energy, results for the year ended 31st December 2017. And number one was from Valrix, that's V-A-L. All right, Val, final results. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciatos.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz. Discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.